Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HMEB Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Today, we're talking about audits. As you might recall, we've been covering this a bit, especially as CMS starts to rev up its audit program after having a sort of lengthy pause during the early months of the COVID-19 pandemic. And here to talk about that is audit expert Wayne Van Halem. Wayne's the president of the Van Halem Group. He's a member of our editorial advisory board, and he's a constant contributor to what we're doing over at HME Business. Wayne, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. It's good to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you on, and thanks again for taking the time. So, the last time we discussed this for the podcast, and sort of this was probably like back in September, I want to say, and then you followed up with an October column that was really good. But you know, we talked a little bit about how CMS would likely phase back in things like the TPE audits and the SMRC reviews and RAC audits and that sort of stuff, and you did a good job on how, you know, providers should sort of prepare, but it was all sort of, I think at that time it was like, here's how we think things are going to go. Yeah. Well, let's follow up. How has that been going? How has CMS's return to audits played out?
Well, I would say for the most part, it's even with what we were anticipating, with a few exceptions. So the audits did start out fairly slow. There was sort of CMS had described it as a toe in the water type of approach, and I would sort of agree with that up until a certain point. Things since that time have certainly seemed to have picked up, and I think one of the probably the most significant that I've seen is some recent SMRC audits, and they're really the largest audits that I've seen in my entire career, both my career at Medicare auditing as well as my current role working with providers.
Really, right now, right? You're saying that right now? Wow. Okay.
Right. And one of the things, there's still not auditing PHE claims, except there's been some that have been lumped into this group. I don't know if that was inadvertent or not. But we're not sure what the plan is yet for those PHE claims. They have indicated that at some point they want to audit them. But these SMRC audits are really significant. I mean, in some instances, hundreds of patients and thousands of claim lines. And we've seen them on ventilators. We've seen them on CGM, urological and incontinence supplies. There's still some, regarding the PHE claims, there's still some answers that we don't really have clear answers to, like the AOB signature issue where CMS waived signature requirements, but then the contractor came back and said that doesn't apply to the AOBs. So there's still some confusion out there on how CMS is going to handle that. But these SMRC audits have really just sort of thrown me for a loop. We're working with someone, they said that they're not going to extrapolate on it, but think of 350 claim lines for a ventilator. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars at risk there. So that's probably the most significant thing that I've seen that I didn't anticipate happening with the return to audits.
That does not sound like a toe. That sounds like perhaps the whole leg.
Yeah.
What's precipitating that? What's causing that?
Yeah, so it's a new type. So we've all heard of the SMRC before. It's the Supplemental Medical Review Contractor, and they've had this contract for a while. It's the Meridian, one of the DME MACs, also has this contract, and the contract is for exactly what it sounds like. They're the supplement, the medical review work that the DME MACs are already doing. So it's another contractor out there that does these audits. And we've had them in the past. They've done some respiratory audits in the past. And they generally review between 20 and 40 claims. It's a one-time post-payment review. There's no extrapolation or anything along those lines. And it's a fairly you know, reasonable review, except, you know, sometimes the 40 claims can be a lot, but those were, those types of audits were, that they were contracted with the CMS provider compliance group, which is the area at CMS that does medical review, and they oversee that type of work. These new SMRC audits that are being done are new contracts that have been awarded to the contractor through the program integrity group at CMS. The program integrity group is different. In fact, they're the ones that oversee the fraud and abuse type of work. So they oversee the UPIC contractors who are out there looking for fraud and abuse. So they've now contracted with the SMRC to do these audits on specific providers. And we've had multiple conversations with them talking about the enormity of the requests that they're asking for. I mean, they're asking for a significant amount of documentation, but then to put on the fact that it's, you know, in some instances, 3,000 claim lines, and they gave us 45 days to respond. And, wow. You know, I guess I'll give them credit that they, you know, in all instances, we had to go back and request extensions. And in many cases, we got 3 or 4 extensions to the time period in which to respond, because it takes that long to gather that much documentation. We just responded to one a few weeks ago, and they wanted documentation, if it was being sent electronically, to be sent on a compact disc. If you imagine, they still utilize those, but and we did. We put them on disc, but there was so much documentation that we ended up sending 26 disks of records, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how long it takes them to perform these reviews and get back. But the main difference is that this is being guided through the program integrity group and not the provider compliance group. So potentially could have more severe implications for someone going through it because of the nature of the type of review.
Wow. You know, I'm kind of floored. I love the tangent there about compact discs. That's really handy. Cause you know, I'm glad they've upgraded from Eomega zip drives.
I think we have one computer in our office that still actually has a compact disk drive, and we keep it for the sole purpose of having to send stuff to Medicare.
So CMS's antiquated IT resources aside, I think you might have touched on this before, real quick, what kind of providers is this impacting? Is it anybody who's a DemiPost supplier, or are there specific categories that they're going after?
Well, so it technically anyone that is a DemiPost supplier, if they are identified by the program integrity group at CMS for one of these reviews, then they're subject to it. Right now, we've seen them limited to ventilators, CGM machines, and then we've also seen some supply audits as well. So those are the categories we've seen as of right now. It doesn't mean there's not going to be more. The old SMRC audits, and they still do this, they post publicly on their website what they're reviewing, but these, because they're under the program integrity group, there's no public information available. You only know when you get this letter. So, you know, I received a number of frantic telephone calls from clients who received this letter with, you know, 3,000 claim lines listed.
Man, that is just crazy. Okay. So, can you give any advice to providers about how, you know, like, are there specific things that these SMRC audits are looking for that, you know, they can make sure to, you know, have on hand, you know, pieces of information, documentation, whatever, so that they can make that process go more easily? And, you know, two, are there any other ways that you suggest that providers prepare for the possibility of getting one of these notifications?
Yeah, this is a hard one to sort of predict because of the nature behind it. It could have been that there were other potential compliance issues in the past or other things happening or just data analysis. So these are hard to predict. When they sent the request, we actually had some conversations. I will give CMS credit in the fact that the individuals at CMS that are overseeing these reviews have been flexible. They've been communicative with us throughout the process. Initially they were asking for everything for every patient over and over again for each claim. And as we were, we'd explain to them that, a ventilator claim, for example, that, you have the initial documentation, you don't have, that initial medical need documentation is going to be the same each claim. Do we need to continue providing it for each claim? And they were flexible in that. They also had a lot of things. You can tell that they were just using a template for the documentation request because they were asking for a lot of things like, for example, the signature process and policy for the EMR system that was used. Well, the EMR system that is used is the physician's or, the hospital's EMR system. They were asking for us to have, the signature policies for those and a list of every individual who has access to the EMR system. And that's just not something that a DME supplier should have or does have. So, we were able to add, but they were, obviously they include that in requests for documentation from physicians. So they included it in this. So we had some discussions with them and really narrowed down what they were looking for. And it ended up being, the normal documentation that you would expect to see, the medical records, the orders, proof of delivery, continued need, those sort of things. So we were able to narrow it down from what started as a much wider net that they were attempting to cast.
Okay, well, the smirk audits sound like a lot of fun there, Wayne, but that's not the only thing that is happening. I've heard that CMS is posing the question to suppliers about whether they would rather continue with post-payment reviews or go back to targeted probe and educate the TPE audits during the remainder of the pandemic. What's going on there? What can you tell me about that? Why is CMS asking this, and what's that mean for providers?
Sure. Well, so what happened was that the contractors reached out to a number of suppliers and essentially asked them if for the remainder of the pandemic, do you prefer that they return, what they've been doing are post-payment service specific reviews. What they were asking these entities is, would they prefer to return to the prepayment targeted probe and educate, the TPE program, or continue with the post-payment service specific reviews? And then they were asking the suppliers to share why. Kind of, I guess, interesting. It's almost like the akin to the executioner asking what weapon you'd want him to use. We had this discussion recently on our regulatory council meeting, and people were split about it. But I think most folks feel like, the TPE program was a lot better, right? Because if you were successful in the TPE program and they did education and you were able to get to a reasonable pass-fail rate, then you received an audit reprieve for a year. But a lot of folks still felt, that it's still too early to return to the TPEs because they are a little bit more involved because you're getting audited on 20 to 40 claims for three rounds, and it's on new claims coming in, and people are still not fully back seeing doctors face to face and things along those lines. So, I think the consensus was that they wanted to stick with post-pay. I was a little concerned about that because, you and I have talked about this several times in the past about the 6-year look-back audits, and if they identify an overpayment, then there's this 6-year look back rule, but that hasn't really been raised with these reviews yet. I think prepayment reviews are a lot less you know, at risk for that. But, you know, I think the consensus was to stick with post-pay for now, because those are claims from prior to, they're only looking at claims prior to the pandemic. And, you know, generally folks feel comfortable about the documentation that they have for those. I think maybe, and, you know, the a home care might ask CMS that if they, you know, are going to continue with the post-payment audits, that it maybe at least they implement some of the positive aspects of the TPE program, such as an audit reprieve, for example. So if they get, you know, a certain number of claims, you know, approved, then perhaps they get a reprieve for a certain period of time, and, mm-hmm. you know, perhaps some communication and education like that program had, but we'll see. But it is kind of interesting that, you know, CMS is asking the supplier for input on what type of audit you want to receive.
Yeah, I do like that executioner analogy. Tell me, when you worked at CMS, did you have to wear those hoods that they
So no, but I did feel a few times I should.
Oh man. All right. Well, okay. I mean, it sounds like there's good points and bad points in either scenario. Right. With the,
right.
Do you, like, as a guy who has a ridiculous amount of experience in this field, both on the CMS side and as a consultant to providers, do you have a gut instinct as to what you think makes more sense, you know, based on your experience?
Well, you know, I always like prepayment. If I was a supplier, I would always prefer prepayment reviews, because then I'm dealing with a claim denial and not an overpayment. Claim denials generally, you can appeal them, or you can, you know, try to requalify the patient, so you're not out a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. You know, but I also understand the challenges right now with the prepayment review, with some of these patients coming in, you know, still areas that are trying to get patients out of the hospital and home to make room for folks that need to be there. So I understand, you know, right now in this environment, why people would prefer post-payment audits, because these, you know, the audits that they're doing are prior to the pandemic, and we know clearly what the documentation requirements were. And, you know, it's a little bit probably more, everyone understands what the rules were then, as opposed to what rules they're going to apply now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Gotcha.
And those post-payment audits scare me because of the 6-year look back rule.
Oh yeah. 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 That's it. It really does open a Pandora's box, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
Okay, so changing gears again, let's talk a little bit about the ALJ backlog at the Office of Medicare Hearings and Appeals. I think I've got that right, OMHA.
You did, yeah.
Hey, there you go. we've seen some reports here that the backlog has gone down considerably, and that's great news, right? Because before we had years-long backlogs, literally hundreds of thousands of appeals backlog, just crazy stuff. And now they've really radically reduced it. And I'm curious, I mean, it sounds like a good thing, but it also sounds like it might open the door for additional problems too, because perhaps CMS is thinking, oh, well, you know, we can be, you know, if there's a reduction in the appeals, then perhaps we need to be, telling our audit contractors to be going out and going after more stuff. I don't know. What's your take?
So it's one of the biggest concerns that I have. So that OMHA has been really, really busy scheduling hearings. We have hearings, it seems like, every week here, and they're on these really old, what the OMHA calls big box cases, which are larger audits with multiple patients, perhaps a statistical sampling and extrapolation. So they're much more involved. We just recently got some updated numbers from OMHA that gave us statistics through the end of 2020. And it's really interesting that, you know, even though DME only accounts for about, I think it's 1.15% of the overall Medicare expenditures, DME is disproportionately represented in the number of appeals sitting at ALJ. So, you know, right now, as at the end of 2020, DME, there's, you know, OMHA hears appeals for every type of healthcare provider. But about 42% of the pending appeals sitting at ALJ are DME appeals. That's pretty amazing. Now, that's actually down from 56% in 2018. So a lot of folks took advantage of some of the settlement conferences. They're pushing and, you know, they implement that serial claim issue. And that's one of the reasons why DME accounts for so much, because there's, you know, it's not just one claim for one date of service. You maybe have one claim, but then it's an ongoing rental. So that turns into 13 claims that are there. So, you know, sort of exponentially gets larger, so that accounts for some of it. But they implemented that serial claim rule where if they approve one date of service, they can pull all the other dates of service and approve those. So that helped a lot in getting the DME numbers down. But, you know, 7 of the top 10 appellants at the ALJ level are still DME suppliers. But we're seeing, you know, what's interesting to me is we're seeing there's a significant decrease in the number of appeals pending. So in 2016, they had over 675,000 appeals pending. At the end of 2020, they had just over 200,000. So they've decreased it a lot. But interestingly enough, the wait time has increased. So then people are like, well, how does that, how that doesn't make any sense. But the wait time at the end of 2020 for an ALJ hearing has risen to almost 4 years. But here's why that's happening. So we had a meeting with them and they, you know, this data was kind of confusing, but once they explained it, it made sense. So when they had all, you know, when they had 675,000, they were trying to figure out what to prioritize. And what they did is they decided, you know, those to take all those old big box cases that they have and set those aside, because those take an extraordinarily lot of time to hear those. The hearings take a long time, the preparation for the judges, as well as the appellants, as well as the contractors, all takes a lot of time. So they decided that they would put those all aside and they would focus on all the little ones. Well, now we're at a point in time where they're now focused on all those big box cases. So they've gotten the little ones through the system process, and now they're focused on these big box cases. That's all the hearings we have scheduled are all big box cases now. So they're grabbing these old appeals to get them finished. But what that does is when they, you know, figure out the data, it's skewing the data up because these appeals have been sitting there longer than most because they've been set aside. So that what that means though is that they're getting through them now. I can say in our practice, they're getting through the ones that we have pending fairly quickly. They have, you know, they have told us that they will have this backlog resolved and they will be hearing cases within 90 days again in 2021, which, you know, that's a great thing. We've all been complaining about this wait time, but
yeah,
it does really concern me about what we might see regarding audits in the future.
Didn't they throw more judges at OMHA? Like before, wasn't there just like a handful of judges? And then one of the things they did was add just literally more staffing bandwidth.
No, they added 70 new judges and they opened up, I think, 6 or 7 new offices around the country. One of them is in walking distance here of our office in Atlanta. That's my concern is they have told us that they are, you know, they are now budgeted and have the staffing to hear 300,000 appeals a year. They are getting nowhere near that volume right now because CMS has really put a a tightening on like the RAC auditors, for example. So the RAC auditors are really what caused this enormous backlog. They were sort of given free rein and were able to audit, you know, thousands and thousands of claims at a time and could continue coming back to providers every 45 days. And you know, they were making billions of dollars doing it, so you can't blame them for continuing it. Yeah. But it's what caused this huge backlog. So CMS since then has really tightened the reins on the RAC. And anytime they're given approval for an audit, the maximum allowed amount, they're only approved to do 500 to 2,000 claims, and then they have to stop and assess the impact on the appeal process. And that has really, really lowered the volume of RAC audits that we've seen. But you have these RAC auditors out there that want to get back to where they aren't restricted so much, so they're making more money. And you have OMHA, who is now staffed. I've talked to them. I said, is there any indication that you're going to decrease your budget and close these new offices?
Right.
No, they now have this budget to handle 300,000 appeals a year. And at the end of 2021, they'll have that backlog resolved, and they're receiving nowhere near that volume now. Which means that's a sign that they would be able to, CMS might be able to loosen up the reins, so to speak, on the racks somewhat. And I've talked with the folks at Avoma, and I said, have you had this conversation with CMS? And while they didn't, you know, come right out and say it, they said that yes, they are in regular communication with CMS. But my guess is that unfortunately we're going to see a return of the RAC program sometime towards the end of 2021, maybe early 2022, when this backlog is caught up, because they're going to have 70 judges in addition to the ones they already had. So they have, you know, over 100 judges with looking for appeals to do. So that means more audits, I'm afraid.
Man, return of the RAC. It's like the the Grindhouse horror movie equivalent for HME.
Well, I mean, those RAC auditors really hit the HME industry hard. And ironically, some of these big box cases that we're now getting to 4 years later are from that first round of RAC audits.
Oh my gosh. If that doesn't say everything right there, I don't know what does. Right. Closing question, Wayne. You know, if you kind of had to bulletize it, what do you anticipate for audits coming up here in the near future?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, outside of, you know, I think my biggest audit concern right now is the ALJ backlog and the return of those RACs. But in the sort of foreseeable future, I think audits are going to continue to increase as things normalize. That's, you know, I think that goes without saying. A lot of folks would anticipate that. And we're starting to see it happening very slowly, sort of similar to how things are happening slowly with things normalizing. But and I also, you know, I think there will definitely be a return to the prepayment TPE program at some point. I think overall the industry supports it. It led to less audits for suppliers, and also they were able to get audit reprieves. So there's a lot of positives about that program. So I think CMS spent a lot of money to implement that program. It was implemented across the board for all types of healthcare providers. So I definitely think they're going to go back to that at some point, which I think for the most part, as long as things are easier and normal as far as patients being able to see their doctors and get documentation and things along those lines, people are fine with that. Also, probably once the waivers of the LCDs are taken away, then people will be more at ease with the TPE program because they know exactly what is required. Whereas now, the biggest concern that I have in the foreseeable future, and I think a lot of folks are, you know, when they do start auditing claims during TPE, which CMS has indicated that they will audit claims during TPE, There's a lot of concern over what standards they're going to apply. During the entire process, they said, that the LCD requirements are waived, but that you still have to have documentation showing that the services are reasonable and necessary. And they've not gone anything beyond that. We've asked for more clarification is what is reasonable and necessary when there's no LCD requirements and they're not providing guidance on that. And I think part of it is that they want to have some flexibility, so they don't want to be so strict with it. But for the supplier community who's been the subject of audits really intense scrutiny over the years, they're a little hesitant to just take CMS's word for it that things are going to be flexible. So, I think that's probably the main thing that we're watching now is, audits will normalize. We'll see once the LCD requirements are put back in place, which is not probably going to be until after the public health emergency is ended. We'll see that return to TPE, but then really looking and watching the plan for CMS to audit the PHE claims and what sort of standards they're going to apply. That's something that we'll be watching really closely, but that's the concern for the foreseeable future when it comes to audits.
Well, I think when that foreseeable future hits, I'm going to have to get on the phone with you again, Wayne.
Yeah.
Or get on Zoom, I guess.
There we go.
All right. Well, Wayne, okay. So obviously you guys provide consulting services when it comes to dealing with audits, either implementing practices and procedures to help providers minimize their audit exposure, and then also responding to audits. So you got a lot of services out there. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. They can always go to our website, which is vanhalengroup.com. They can get our contact information there, both email and phone, and reach out to us directly. We're also on the Van Halen Group LinkedIn page. We have a Van Halen Group Facebook page and Twitter as well. So follow us on social media. We try to keep audit alerts going out there and keep our clients and other folks in the industry educated on some things that we're seeing going on. So.
All right. Well, Wayne, thanks a bunch.
Yeah, my pleasure, Danny.
Okay, again, if you need help with audits, make sure to check out the Van Halen Group at Van Halen, and that's with an M, not an N, vanhalengroup.com. And if you're a CMS program integrity staffer listening to this podcast on your Sony Discman, you might want to consider changing your AA batteries because they're probably from 1998. Folks, don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com. Again, that's hme-business.com, and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine as well. And you can also get that as a digital PDF flipbook as well. So you don't have to have the dead tree version. You can also do the digital version. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter. And I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have, and I should add, we're also on LinkedIn as well. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, that's at Post Acute News, or by email at DKO, P as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll keep covering compelling HME topics like audits. But for now, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.